Will you stand with us as we read our scripture for this morning? We are going to be in Luke chapter 15. Jesus once told this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them.
Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his field to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything.
When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against my heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father.
But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate.
Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.'
The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.'
'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we have to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' You may be seated.
I know we don't normally read that story for Easter. Normally you'd walk in and you'd expect us to be talking about what happened that day, about the resurrection, the empty tomb and all of that, and the ascension of Jesus. But today I felt led to talk about why Jesus did what he did by going to that cross and into that tomb. And this story that we read this morning is all about. It's Jesus telling us why he did what he did. It's probably Jesus' most famous parable, and everyone knows about it, but it's often, we often don't know the complete story, or we often get it confused, or we only see part of it. We all always chalk it up to it being about one young man who made some bad life choices and chose a wrong road and disregarded his father and wandered off and squandered everything he had. And then when he came back, his father forgave him. But there's more to this story than that. It's actually a story about three paths you and I could take in life. Two of those paths lead to the grave and death. One of them leads to life and the garden. And that's what we want to look at this morning. The son we call prodigal, he obviously represents the first one of those paths, one of those paths that leads to death. It's the path of chasing after our appetites. So lock that into your mind right now. That's the first path, this path of chasing after our appetites. You know how this path can go wrong. You've experienced it probably in your own life. You know someone, or maybe you've been someone, or I'm sure you've at least seen someone on TV who chased after their appetites and became addicted. And that's an easy one to think of, someone who is willing to sacrifice anything and everything and anyone to get that thing that they're addicted to. So they throw aside their pride, they throw aside their relationships, they throw aside their health, they throw aside morals, everything to get that thing that they're addicted to. But this morning, I want us to realize addiction is like stage four of the cancer of chasing after our appetites. Chasing your appetites as a way of life is a cancer, and addiction is just stage four. There are other stages where we're unhealthy and sick and diseased and that are dangerous and threatening our lives. Dr. Anna Lemke is a professor of psychiatry, and addiction medicine at Stanford University. She's also runs the Stanford Addiction Medicine Clinic. She wrote a fascinating book called Dopamine Nation. I want you to listen to what she writes about how chasing our appetites is killing us. And as I read, you'll almost be able to see the progression of levels up to addiction and how this works. She writes this. She said, 70% of the world's global deaths are attributable to modifiable behavioral risk factors like smoking and physical inactivity and diet. 70% of deaths are related to our inability to control appetite, chasing our appetites. The leading global risk for mortality are high blood pressure, tobacco use, high blood sugar, physical inactivity, and obesity. In 2013, an estimated 2.1 billion adults were overweight, compared with 857 million in 1980. There are now more people worldwide, except for a few places in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, who are obese than who are underweight. Rates of addiction are rising the world over. The disease burden attributed to alcohol and illicit drug addiction is 1.5% globally and more than 5% in the United States. This doesn't even include tobacco use. Drug of choice varies by country. The U.S. is dominated by illicit drugs, Russia and Eastern Europe by alcohol addiction. Global deaths from addiction have risen in all age groups between 1990 and 2017, with more than half the deaths occurring in people younger than 50 years of age. What I want you to get from all of those stats and numbers is this: chasing after appetites is killing us. Choosing a life where we pursue appetites is killing us because we've become so good at meeting our appetites. We become so good at feeding our appetites. We become so good at it that our dopamine system can't keep up. Some of you know the word dopamine. You've heard the word dopamine. You relate it to the chemical in your brain that you feel when there's pleasure, right? You've heard of it before, or at least now you've heard of it. So for instance, you took a bite of chocolate. What would happen is there'd be a spike of dopamine in your brain and you would feel good. But there's more to it than that. That's not exactly how it works. How it works is this. I just said the word chocolate, and 99.9% of you who love chocolate or like chocolate, there was a dopamine spike in your brain when I said it. For those of you who don't like chocolate, I want you just now to take a moment, think of the thing you like, ice cream, whatever it is. Okay, now you've gotten your little dopamine spike. But did any of you get any chocolate? Unless some of you are that addicted to chocolate that you had some in your pocket and you... No, you didn't get any chocolate, but I said the word or you thought of that other thing and your body released a little bit of dopamine that spiked, a little bit of pleasure there. But do you know what happened next? Do you know what's happened now since that? There's been a crash. Your dopamine now has dropped below the level it was at before I said the word chocolate. So now you feel worse than you did before I said the word chocolate. You're welcome. But here's what's gonna happen now is there's gonna be that drive, and sometime later today, someone's gonna find you in a closet with one of the kids' chocolate bunnies. Because you're gonna be pursuing this. See, in many ways, you could refer to dopamine as the chemical of pursuit. It drives us to want more. And here's what happens that's even more difficult with this. Once you actually get some chocolate later today, or whatever that thing is, your dopamine's gonna jump even more when you taste it, and it's gonna go high. But then when you're done, it's gonna drop just as far down low, and you're gonna crave and want more. It's a roller coaster ride. And so it's this chemical of desire. And here's why this is so important to understand. We've gotten so good at wanting and having an appetite and then feeding that appetite that our dopamine system can't keep up. And you would think we're getting better at this. We'd be more and more satisfied, but the reality is we're becoming less and less satisfied as people and even as nations. Lemke points out, and I want you to hear the way she says it. She describes it, it's like we're a cactus that got picked up and transplanted to the rainforest. Now there's way too much water. We don't know what to do. We're drowning. And she says, the net effect on us is this, that we now need more reward to feel pleasure and less injury to feel pain. In other words, it's harder for us to feel pleasure and easier for us to feel pain now. That's what's becoming of us. As we chase, if you live your life chasing appetites, this is what happens. And that younger brother, he was doing what you and I do, chasing his appetites. And eventually it led him to a rock bottom experience. Because eventually, chasing appetites, you're going to burn out. You're going to feel like you're in a grave. He went from this wonderful family, this wonderful home, and a wonderful life where he had everything he needed, to the point where now he's in the middle of a bunch of pigs staring hungrily at them as they eat and wondering to himself, I wonder if pigs like to share. That is a kind of death right there, isn't it? That's not living. That's dying. That's death. And this is where chasing appetites leads us. That's one way you could be living your life. That's the way a lot of us are living our lives. Our culture has gone off after chasing appetites. We are a culture of appetite chasing, satisfying ourselves to death. Maybe you've experienced it in your own life. I know I've experienced it in mine. I know I've gone down this road in my life. I know I've found myself in that place of nothing pleases, nothing satisfies, and you keep feeding it, but nothing satisfies. You've been there. Some of you may feel like you're stuck there today. Like, is there any hope that things could be different? Isn't this just the way life is? And it's hard to see that there's another way that life could be, but there is. And maybe today the most important thing for some of us to do is to realize that there is a different way to live life than the way you're living, this chasing appetite thing. There is a way that actually leads to life and not feeling constantly unsatisfied and constantly hurt and not having enough. There's a way that doesn't lead to the death and the grave. But before we talk about that, we need to talk about the second path that leads to the grave. It's the one that gets overlooked in this story all the time. Do you remember the end of the story? Do you remember how it ended? Some of you know it so well. You've heard it thousands of times. And your danger this morning is that you might just quickly dismiss it as though you know this parable. But at the end of the parable, who's outside? Who's missing the party? The older brother, not because he's not invited, it's self-imposed. So we should pay some attention to him because he represents another way you and I can live our lives that leads to the grave. If the younger brother's death experience was that pigsty, for him that was like realizing I've hit rock bottom, this is a kind of death, and what got him there was chasing his appetites. For the older brother, the death experience is standing there outside that party, looking through the windows and hearing everyone celebrate and bitterness consuming him. That was his grave right there. And what got him there? Chasing approval. That's the other way you and I can live life that leads to the grave. Chasing approval is what got him there. He was bitter because he stayed home and he worked hard, always did what he was supposed to do, but he never felt like he was good enough, never felt like he had his father's approval, always kept working for it. And the ironic thing was, he already had it. Jesus tells us clearly in the story, the father considered everything he had as though it belonged to his older son. Once the younger son took his part of the inheritance and left, all that was left belonged belonged to the other son, the older son. And that's how the father saw it. It was all his to do with as he pleased. But somehow, because this young man had locked in his head, he needed to get approval. It was driving him, and he never realized the approval that was there for him all along. It was like he dug his own grave and lay down in it. And that's what chasing approval is like. Some of the most insightful writers of our time have pointed out that pursuing approval is a lot of what leads to the angst and the dysfunction and the drive that depresses us and the fear that treats us like slaves, this fear of not being accepted. And we've seen it, you see it in artists a lot. Arthur Miller, who was the playwright who wrote Death of a Salesman, he abandoned God when he was a teenager, ran away from God. And decades later, he said, "I feel like I've carried around this sense of judgment. I could not escape it. It still felt like I needed to prove myself to others, to have somebody tell me I was okay, that I was acceptable, that I was approved of." And so he chased that approval from audiences, that audience would love his work. And it led him to living a life of death. Madonna, who a lot of us, when we were growing up, she was super popular. She said this once when she was being interviewed. She said, "All of my will has always been to conquer some horrible feeling of inadequacy. I'm always struggling with that fear. My drive in life is from this horrible fear of being mediocre. And that's always pushing me. Because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove that I am somebody. My struggle has never ended, and it probably never will." Over the last decade, social media has turned all of us into approval junkies across generations. It's not just the young people, it's the middle-aged people, it's the older people. It's poisoned our culture to the point where we are all chasing approval, and you may not even realize it. I'm sure this older brother didn't realize how much he was chasing approval in his life, but it imprisoned him. And you may not realize it this morning either. This one's harder to see. It's easy to see when an appetite or an addiction has hold of you. It's harder to see sometimes when approval is what's driving you. But it drives you into the grave. And the tragedy is that what we're looking for, this approval, we're looking for it in all the wrong places. Searching and searching when it's waiting for us if we would just turn around and see God there, offering us the gift of his approval if we would just let go of chasing all these other things. God is there to give us this. So you can chase your appetites or you can chase your approval. They're both going to lead you into the grave. They're going to lead you into living a life as though you're already in the grave. But there is a third alternative. There is a third way of living that it doesn't quite show up in the story. To see it, you got to zoom out of the story and look at the storyteller himself. Because Jesus is the one who shows us this third way of living, and it's to live on purpose. You see, there's something missing in this story. I don't know if you picked up on it or thought about it while they were reading it. What's missing is someone should have been going chasing after the son who ran away. Someone should have been going to try and bring reconciliation between these two sons and the deaths they lived and the life the father was inviting them into. And to really understand this, you got to step out and realize who Jesus is and who he's talking to when he said this. Jesus was Jewish, and he's talking to the Jewish people when he says this. And it's like he's saying to them, "Hey, guys, we talk about ourselves as the chosen people because God chose us. But we've forgotten, you've all forgotten what he chose us for. He didn't choose us to sit around flaunting that we're God's chosen people, that we have God's approval. That's not what he chose us for. If you go back to what we've talked about the last 2 months, God chose them to be the vehicle through whom he would bless the world. Their choosing was so that they could go into this world and bring all the people who'd wandered away and been lost back to God. That's what they were chosen for. And Jesus is there saying, we've lost our purpose. And as a nation, Israel lost its purpose. And they became like the rest of us, chasing after appetites, chasing after approval. And so Jesus steps in, the Son of God, takes on flesh and becomes like us to fulfill this purpose of searching, seeking, and finding those who are lost and bringing them home, even though it meant chasing and searching and seeking all the way to the grave. What could be more opposite of chasing appetites and approval than the cross? The oldest church song we know about Jesus is in the Bible, in Philippians chapter 2. Listen to what it says about Jesus and how he lived on purpose. It says, who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that's above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. Jesus showed us this third way to live, and that's to live with a purpose. And his purpose was to do what God has intended to do since the moment we walked away from him, to find us and bring us home. Jesus pursued that purpose. And that purpose of reconciling us, it required him to be selfless. It required him incredible humility and incredible sacrifice. But look at where it led him. In that song, where did it lead him? To ultimate glory in life. You can chase your appetites. They're never going to lift you up and give you that. You can chase for approval. It's never going to lift you up and give you that. Or you can chase after and pursue purpose and have the graves of those other things turned into gardens. Team, would you make your way back? Does anybody know how many people completed the 2016 Boston Marathon? I'd be shocked if anyone did. It's 26,639 people completed the marathon in 2016. Coming in 26,639th place was a 72-year-old woman named Fran Drozd. She came in dead last. There were no crowds there waiting to scream and shout when she got there. No, you know, bandstand with people giving out ribbons and everything. They were gone. Most of the stuff was taken down. It was, by the time she got there, it was about 8:45 at night. They thought she'd gotten lost or kidnapped. They didn't know what was going on. So there was really no one there to celebrate her in the end when she came in dead last. But the real story with her wasn't what place she finished in compared to all the other runners. It was the purpose for which she was running the race that day. She ran the race that day, one, to raise money for the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, but most of all, for her husband, who was fighting cancer for the third time. And so when she crossed that finish line, dead last, the only person really waiting for her paying attention was her husband. The only person who put a medal around her neck was her husband. He found something and put it around her neck. And one reporter who caught on to what was going on later said about it, "It turns out this race's loser is quite the winner." If you were to look at Jesus on the cross, you might be tempted to think that he came in dead last. You might be tempted to think that that was a horrible way to end. But Jesus came in last on purpose. His purpose was to chase you and I all the way to the graves we've dug ourselves, chasing our appetites, chasing approval. His purpose was to come and lead us home and make a way for us to come home. But Easter tells us the story doesn't end there. If Jesus had only chased us to the grave, we'd have a wonderful love story, but that's all it would be. But Jesus' story isn't just a wonderful love story. It's a story of power, too. Jesus rose from the grave. That's why we're here. That's why we worship him. Jesus rose from the grave. So this is a story of power. He overcame death. And all the thousand deaths you and I die every day because we're chasing appetites and approval. He overcame all of it for all who believe and call on his name, who put their trust in him. And when you do that, Jesus will turn your graves into gardens too.